Welcome to the Pause Rewind Play podcast, guys. It's been a while. How's it going?
Good.
Great.
Great. Would you guys say life is giving you two thumbs up or just one? Or you could do halfsies.
Oh, I'm 100% two thumbs up over on my side over here.
You've been rolling
it's
around.
It's been great, yeah. You see this nice tan?
Yeah.
Yeah, me neither. So white as can be.
Vince, you're sitting next. I mean, if you're sitting next to me, if I was like, in Casey's place.
There's probably like three shades of like tan.
White or red.
Paleness.
Sunburn.
Sunburn.
Yeah, I just got back from a trip to Puerto Rico and it was amazing. We had a really good time. So.
Nice. Do you know what a cancer is in Spanish?
No.
El cancer.
Is it just cancer?
It's a Deadpool reference.
Oh, I was like, what is happening right now?
I'm sorry. I just know in Puerto Rico they speak Spanish. So I was they like, do, yeah. Trying to throw that out there.
Yeah, yes, they do. Yeah.
Yo tango un treatment por cancer. El cancer.
Nailed it. Okay. So you need to come be my translator.
Yeah, see.
Yeah. We took a trip out there at the perfect time, too, because I swear there was, like, nothing in theater. So it was, we were gone for 2 weeks, and all of a sudden I got back, and there's something to go see now. So I'm pretty excited.
What are you going to go see, then?
There's, like, four in the theater right now. I went and saw Godzilla versus Kong.
I saw your rating on that. I was a little disappointed. That seems low for you.
That's actually pretty high for me for a Godzilla film.
I was like, that seems pretty low for you.
No, the Godzillas, I had to go back and look at what I've been given those monster movies other than Godzilla minus one, and I don't think any of them have broke a three. So this one was actually one of the, honestly, more fun of them. Like, I went in expecting to hate watch the crap out of that movie, and I was fairly entertained. I'm not going to lie.
Two and a half stars entertained.
Oh, no.
I expected to walk out with like a one, you know, maybe just one and a half star. I go to all of them because I just loved.
So that was going to be actually my question. It's like, you know, you're going to come out like with a low rating. Let me go spend my time here.
I just want to sit down and eat popcorn and watch monsters punch each other. Like, okay. That's why you go to these movies, right?
Do you know what I think would be the perfect movie? Like, when you talk about, like, sit down and go watch things, like, punch each other, right? Do you remember those, like, Rock'em Sock'em Robots thing? I think someone should make a really good Rock'em Sock'em.
They did already.
Yeah, it's Toy Story 2.
No, it's called, it's with Hugh Jackman. What's it called?
I don't want that one. I don't want it to be. I know it's called Real Steel. It's great. I like that one. I'm not talking about that. I want them to be physical Rock'em Sock'em robots.
Little toy.
But like kids are like sweating, but the toys are speaking to each other and like people are fighting. But like what happens is like it's like a detachable cube, like where you can add more, take more off. And then just like the robots themselves in that little experience. Like, I come from a family where everyone's so happy. All that. You know, like,
I'm a human too. I have thoughts.
Yeah, I have
feelings.
But like Toy Don't Story punch meets Real Steel meets Rock'em Sock'em robots. I want a nostalgia flick that's just like that, like Rock'em Sock'em Robots and like the toss across beanbag like flies into the thing or something, you know, from when we were kids. That's what I want. Sorry, that was a random
one. I like it. Let's make it happen.
Like you talk about
start that petition.
Robots.
Someone produce it.
I just gave the idea. Throw it in ChatGPT, send it to a producer, then make it better without ChatGPT. Use your human brain.
There's some other good ones out right now too, though. I want to go see Late Night with the Devil.
Yes.
That one looks really good.
Okay, that's on Ali and I's list.
I want to go see the Omen prequel. I think it's called The First Omen, right? Okay. That's what it's called, if I remember right.
I've heard that one. Yeah.
Civil War comes out this weekend. Monkey Man came out last weekend. Looks freaking good.
I've heard that one's doing really well or that people like it.
It looks great.
Yeah.
It looks good. Ghostbusters came out. Still haven't seen the first one of this new series, but I might get around to one of those.
Wait, there's one before this one that they use in a reboot?
Yeah, Afterlife, I think it's called.
Oh.
With the Stranger Things kids.
Also, can we talk about the one guy with the mustache who's still like crazy fit, who's in the original Ghostbusters, who's like old now but fit. He has the perfect mustache. Gosh, what's his name?
I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I've seen the original Ghostbusters one time, and that's all I've seen Ghostbusters-wise.
Okay.
And I'll also just take this chance because it's acting up again to apologize for my eyes. If you're watching on YouTube, they're just watery.
Need some more eye drops or anything?
No, I'll be okay. It just acts up. I'll be fine.
Right.
Well, I think there's a lot of good stuff coming out. Well, Josh, what have you been looking forward to anticipating and how's life been for you?
Anticipating some sort of the same Civil War. I kind of want to go see it this weekend because there's no... I mean, you guys know I've been watching a lot of F1 lately, and so there's no Grand Prix this weekend, so I think I might take the chance to go see some movies. So that's a the top one on my list. I feel like there's some more that I just like I haven't thought about lately because I've been like in a real like kind of just like TV kick where I've been like trying to watch movies, but I just like kind of end up like falling back on some TV.
You just finished like Breaking Bad, right?
Yeah, there's some good stuff out right now.
I just finished Breaking Bad, yeah.
For like the fourth time.
For like the, yeah, I don't know what time. Definitely something like that. Me and Cade, friend of the podcast who's been on before, we both like Breaking Bad. We both like hanging out. And so Breaking Bad is a show that we've seen a few times. And so we usually just call each other on Instagram and hang out and chat and throw on Breaking Bad in the background. And I guess we've been doing it a while now because we just finished it.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
So we did that and we watched El Camino as well. And now we're going to start Better Call Saul here soon. So it'll be fun.
Sticking to that universe.
Sticking to that universe. And like, I mean, like it seems like we're obsessed, which I mean, I guess we kind of are, but just, Kate has moved away, sadly, does not live here close anymore, but because we always like hanging out and doing stuff, we are going here in a couple weeks to meet up in Albuquerque, see some Breaking Bad sights, play some golf.
Can you still throw a pizza on the Walter White house, or is that against the rules now?
Yeah, it's against the rules.
It always was.
Was against the rules. The person who lives there just hates everyone and everything, which is fair. Yeah, because things happen. Right, like if people just kept coming to your house and throwing pizza on your roof, you'd hate it too.
At least put it on her doorstep.
Why would you still live there is the biggest question. You could sell that money for...
Sell the house for money. Why don't you turn it into like the Walter White Museum?
You could do so much with it. But I mean, it's their house. I guess they just want to live there and people to leave them alone. So we'll go and we'll take pictures from a distance, I guess.
They want to live in peace.
Or just usually houses like that, they'll have like a little thing out front that's like, hey, if you're going to take a selfie, like leave $5. And there's not like really like an enforcement of it, but
they do that.
You know, I know that they definitely did that. We visited, Jaleese and I visited the main house from Shameless in Chicago when we were there. And there was that there. And I've heard of it at a few other places.
I think, like in Hollywood, there's some houses that have been in shows and stuff like that. And they have like a Venmo account.
Venmo's
smart. Upkeep, like all that kind of stuff. It makes sense. That'd be cool, though. Sorry, I interjected with your Breaking Bad thing. I was just finished it.
That's pretty much it. The Albuquerque. I don't know what else I'm looking forward to in theaters.
There's a lot of good TV out, too, that we need to catch up on, though.
I finally got my brother to watch Severance. Hey-o.
Yes. Good job, my friend. And I'm glad that you finally watched it.
Scoot.
Any interest in Shogun, either of you guys?
Okay, so yes. I've
heard about it.
Yes. What are your thoughts on it?
Really? I just heard, like, anyone who talks about it is just good things. Mm-hmm. Is it all the way out yet?
Because
they're doing weekly releases, I'm pretty sure, right?
I think it is.
I think the full first season is out, and I know it's already been renewed fully, right, for another season, if I remember right.
I think it was just limited.
I think
it's just like 8 or 9 episodes done.
See, I love that type of thing, actually. That's what I want. Please, thank you.
I know, me
too. So I watched all the previews, and I was like, okay, I'm down to commit to this. And then I got distracted by all the movies from when I was a teenager recently.
Nice.
And
I've been watching
so many old movies like that.
Which ones? But,
well, let me tell you, I rewatched The 500 Days of Summer. What's weird is if you watch it by yourself, you don't get the same feeling as when you're watching it with a person who means a lot to you. Because like, what's really interesting is my wife and I, we've watched this multiple times in our relationship, and both of us have been like, oh, I felt related more to her this time or related to him. Have you seen that movie before?
I haven't seen that movie, but I know the premise of it, and
it's a good breakup movie.
What happens, and there's also a lot of like not similar movies, but movies that you can kind of get the same feel and tone from.
Well, and then I rewatched one that was when we were a little bit older, The Internship with Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn, when they like are old dudes go get like internships at Google. And then I also rewatched Juno, and then I watched part of Scott Pilgrim, and I just kind of got distracted because, you know, it was like,
dude, did you see the new Scott Pilgrim on Netflix,
like the animated one? I think it looks good. It's great.
It's really, really good.
Yeah.
So the first episode feels like it's just like, oh, they're just redoing the movie.
Okay.
But by the end of the first episode, there's a spin on the rest of the series. So it's not like feels exactly like the first movie up until like the end of the first episode. And then it just runs off on its own direction. So check it out. It's really good.
Cool.
So you guys need to figure out, obviously, the show that I want you to watch because I can't remember it. But speaking of a show that Vince recommended us to watch, that Jaleese and I are slowly making our way through. We're about halfway through Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Oh, yay.
Oh, it's been super fun.
I'm on episode 3.
You loving it? You guys loving it?
It's very fun. I liked what you mentioned about it because that kind of like not helped me, but I was kind of like, oh, okay, I see. And it made it a lot more straightforward of like each episode is step of a relationship and stuff like that, along with being that classic spy through all that stuff. Yeah. And it is very fun.
That's not just episode 1.
And speaking of Severance, and then later on, we can also mention Severance with one of the actors of one of the movies we're going to talk about. His other romantic interest is in, I think it's episode 2 of Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Not Irving, because Irving is the other one, right?
Yeah.
But his name is what, Bert in Severance? I can't remember.
I think so.
The one who's in R&D.
Yes. I'm trying to remember now.
Sorry. I love
But you went off on Shogun, and I interjected with you of all my mid-2000s stuff. Like, what did you think about Shogun? How far along?
I started it night before last, and I got about halfway through the first episode, and then something came up. I don't remember what happened, but so I just barely dipped my toe into it. Like 20 minutes in.
How is it?
But it's good so far.
Like 20 minutes in. I feel like it's kind of like that first impressions thing. Like you usually have like one or two episodes to do it. But from what I've heard from Shogun, like a lot of people are like, I watch just a little bit of this and I know it's going to be real good throughout.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely tell there's quality put into it. There's lots and lots of subtitles. So, okay. Which it's fine. Like I think I'd rather watch it with subtitles than dubbing, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of cool to hear the Japanese language and just kind of be immersed in that world completely. But I really don't. I haven't watched enough to really like make a solid statement or opinion on it. But
so far, so good. 20 minutes in.
Intriguing. The trailer sold me on it immediately. So yeah. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. I just got to get back around to it.
I'm excited to like have some more time to come into that soon. Mm-hmm. Well, give me 2 movies you've been watching since it's been a while, I guess, that people should watch before we dive into our thing.
Does that have to be new movies?
Doesn't have to be new. It can be anything you've been watching.
Okay. Well, there are some good movies on Netflix right now that people just don't give enough credit to. And I'm going to watch them in the next few days. But I watched the first, if you can... You can call it a trilogy. You cannot call it a trilogy. The first is on Max. The next 2 are Netflix. Unbreakable. The M. Night Shyamalan classic. Possibly his best movie up there with The Sixth Sense, in my opinion. Watched it the other night because Jaleesa saw that Glass and Split were on Netflix, and we talked about them, and she was like, oh, I've never seen those. And I was like, they're good, and I think you'd like them. So she said, okay, let's do it. So we watched Unbreakable, and it was very fun to revisit it and watch it. And in classic Shyamalan fashion, there's a twist at the end, and I think the Unbreakable twist is truly one of the best. Mm. And it was so fun to watch it and just be looking over at Jaleesa because she hadn't seen it, and her just be like, wait, what? Like... So Unbreakable is great, and Split and Glass are also good. People, like, Glass has such mixed reviews and such mixed feelings that people have about it, but I think that, like, I think Unbreakable is the best of the trilogy. I would probably rank it in that order, Unbreakable, Split, Glass, but people think that's, like, throwing shade at Glass, and people just say Glass is a bad movie sometimes, and it is not. If you saw Glass and you thought it was bad, I beg you, it's on Netflix now, to give it another chance.
I'm like, this is...
Give it another shot.
Okay, we can't go into too crazy. We'll talk about this another time.
So those are my 2, 3, whatever that I'm going to mention.
What about you, Vince?
Okay, I'm going to do a movie, and I'm going to do a TV show, because I don't have another movie.
Great.
First off, Lisa Frankenstein. I don't know if you guys have seen that one.
I heard. It was all over, like... It was sponsoring. I do like movie games each morning on Twitter, and it was sponsoring that for a long time.
Oh, it was fantastic. It's very much one of those, like, it's going to be a cult classic, you know. It's got super. I mean, watch the trailer. It's exactly what you get. The trailer is very well done, and it just like packages up in a nice little bow and presents it to you. It's funny. It's so funny. It's out there. It's so creative. It's I just had a lot of fun with it. So check out Lisa Frankenstein. It's worth a watch. The other one is the TV show. We're a little over halfway through Bad Batch season 3 of Star Wars, The Bad Batch. So nice. It's the last of the season. In classic Star Wars television fashion, they're using the cartoons to fill in gaps that the movies just kind of like skipped over with like one line of dialogue. Mm-hmm. this series, I talked about it before, is all about the clones and kind of like what happened to the clones after the Clone Wars and the prequels and stuff. And it's like the transition between the prequels to the original trilogy. And it's getting a lot into how Palpatine returned this whole Ooh. Season. Like, they've been dropping, like, little hints about M counts, which I don't know if you guys are, like, super into the Star Wars trilogies, but the Metachlorians mm-hmm. are, you know, if you have a high Metachlorian count, then you've got, like, a really high chance or an easier way to tap into the Force, basically. And this third season is really tapping into, like, exploring what the Empire did with M counts in order to clone Palpatine for the sequel trilogies, kind of a thing. So,
because
Bad Batch, check it out.
Bad Batch, check it out. And I'm going to enroll really quickly through here. I definitely would recommend watching The Flash, the 2023 movie. I'm staring at the camera because I don't dare look at Vince, to be honest with you right now. No, I actually loved The Flash. I wanna say this very honestly because I know. Did you watch it or no?
So I just know what Vince thinks about Vince, it.
I know you didn't love it, and I think I want to look at this. I gave it like a pretty decent rating, and I'm pretty sure. Yeah, you gave it 2.5 stars, and I gave it...
As good as Kong.
Same as Godzilla Kong.
it's better than Kong.
But I gave it 3.5 stars, because I actually really liked it, and I thought, like, despite, like, and this is the problem, is, like, I know that Ezra Miller has a lot going on in life, and that there's a lot of crap, and the baby CGI in that was quite awful. The CGI was lacking a little bit, but I thought the overall story was good. I just want to say that I think the idea of, like, has that movie been out long enough that I can give some spoilers? I'm going to give spoilers on The Flash really quickly. And I'm sorry, Josh, if you're going to watch it, I apologize.
Dude, when's the last time I watched a freaking movie in the DC universe even at all?
Dude, I know you watched 2022? The new Shazam movie over and over and over again because it's your favorite.
I haven't watched the original Shazam movie. I know. Here's the thing. I know that one's good at least. But.
It's good. I like it. It's good. I like it. But, what I like about this is, like, the Flash is, like, a very interesting character, right? Because it can move time, speed, all that kind of stuff. And so what I liked about it was kind of, like, for me and, like, just as a person, right? I was like, oh, man, like, I can't change every outcome or I can't predict every outcome, but I can, like, look forward in a good, like, I can be accepting of what's going forward. And I thought the movie did a really good job of that. Kind of, like, go through the emotions of a roller coaster. And as you guys know, I love a good movie with a little bit of heart in it. I can't fight back a tear for too long. So it was really good. I enjoyed it.
I completely agree. The storyline's awesome. The Flashpoint comic is really, really good. I feel like they missed some opportunities. Like, I don't think they should have brought back Michael Keaton. I think they should have introduced the comic accurate version of Batman that they used for the storyline.
So I don't even know about that. Like,
I'll tell you later. It's freaking cool. And then also I love Supergirl in it. Like, I thought she was fantastic. I thought she was so cool.
That was cool. I like Supergirl, and I'm sad that they act like the full movie. Like, that's one of the things, like, I know that people are obsessed with Superman, but I love the idea of variations of, like, different people from Krypton or a different storyline of what came and what did, because, like, that was cool. I'm not going to go any further, but that was a lot of fun. And then I'm going to just call this one out, and we can talk about in another part of this, but I did watch... Poor Things finally, and I thought Poor Things was a lot of fun. I think that, like, I'm not saying that everyone should watch it, right? Like, look at the rating, look at kind of the parents' guide and whatever.
So much fun!
It's so much
Disney
fun,
Plus.
Though.
Watch it, kids.
Yeah, watch it.
I know it's a Disney
it's like
movie,
Hulu
but it's
on
not
Disney Plus, something like that.
Yeah, it's on there. But, like, I'm just saying, like, be mindful of it when you go into it, because, like, I wasn't even fully aware. I was like, oh, but, like, in typical, you've talked about it, Yorgos Lanthimos fashion. I was like, this is a fun film.
It's
a little
funny.
Weird, little fun. And oh my gosh, what's his name now? The one who plays the Hulk.
Mark Ruffalo.
I loved his performance in it.
Right, me too.
He's great. And then I thought the supporting cast was fun and it was weird, but also Emma Stone just did such a beautiful job with mm-hmm. her portrayal of the whole character and kind of like how it all works. And also Willem Dafoe, the man, the myth, the legend.
I was going to say, I'll watch any movie where you just take a whole scene and just put a still camera and just look at Willem Dafoe burping bubbles.
That was so weird.
That was great to be.
I forgot about that.
My father removed my stomach.
The weird, like, toad bubbles.
Oh, man.
But it's great. I have one more that I want to add because okay, you watched it as well really quickly. We don't have to do anything else. Vince, you watched The Creator. as well, which is kind of like the cyberpunk type film. I think you brought up in a podcast that we've talked about.
We talked about it on the Oscar one.
Okay.
Whether or not it should win the Oscar for best visuals, which it did not.
Yeah, it did not. But I finally watched it, and I wanted to say that was a really cool movie. And I thought it was really clever in the use of formatting of, like, the way fear-mongering can get people, kind of like misinformation, but also like it was cyberpunky enough with rural enough type feel. Like, it was a lot of fun. I don't know if you've watched it yet, but I definitely would recommend that to you, Josh. I think you would enjoy it because it has everything you enjoy about it, and it's a visually beautiful film, in my opinion.
Well, and Casey and I, yesterday when we went to go see Dune 2 again, I was talking about how much of a sci-fi kick I've been on lately. So... All right, well, so now it's time to talk about a movie where people take fear-mongering to the next level, and what was that else that you said about Crater Casey?
Oh, man.
Denis Villeneuve's Dune Part 2.
Denis Villeneuve's Dune Part 2. Da, da, da,
da. So Casey and I went and saw it last night.
Yep. For the second time?
Casey's second, first.
His first.
His third.
My third time. How I went and I saw it twice, like, within, because I went and saw the first time. I saw it in IMAX. So good. And then I went and saw it again like that same week because it was like really that like time where it was popping off. And I was never like I love this movie and we're going to talk about how much I love this movie. But there are like some people who are just like, this is the moment that, and I mean, kind of is, right? People are like, dude, our parents had Star Wars in the theater, or these people had this in the theater. And I'm not like saying it's like to the level of those, at least not yet or something. I don't know. But like, really, when else are we going to have such, like, a crazy sci-fi experience that we just get a go experience in the theaters like this? That's such crazy world building. Hi, Big Kitty.
Well, and I think,
and
too,
stuff like that. So I was like, I want to go see it again. Like, and I'm not going to be ashamed to go see it again.
No, hopefully
this sound is a mess.
I was like, hoping to see it a second time before we got around to it. I just didn't find a night. I still have yet to see it in IMAX, but I did see that they're extending the IMAX release even longer, so that'll give me another opportunity to get over there.
I'll be real with you. So I re-listened, I listened to the book for the first time. So I guess read the book.
Yeah, right, I read
for the
first it time. Leading up to it too.
Yeah, I was like, I really need to see it. I really need to watch it because I watched, and I think I've talked about this, the OG David Lynch Dune. That's one of the things my dad and I watched growing up. I'm giving that so you don't make fun of it too much. It's a sentimental thing. But no, like we
is
watched
that. Is
that
the one with Patrick Stewart, or is that a different one?
Yeah, it's
the one with Patrick. One with Patrick Stewart. OG Patrick Stewart when he had hair on the side of his head.
Well, he still looks the same, man.
Yeah, he hasn't aged a day. You haven't aged a day. But no, I just kind of like have grown up knowing about it and playing games and like watching the miniseries that happened in the mid-2000s. And I was like, I've never read the book. I don't know all the lore. So I started listening to it, and I was like, oh, we'll see if I listen to it like on regular speed or 1.5, you know, just get through it. And I listened to it on regular speed, so I didn't miss anything really. It was amazing. It was fun. And I say it was fun as in, like, I understood the world, the development, and, like, all of the big stuff. Because the problem is, like, these universes, right? Like, and if I'm wrong, please correct me, but the Dune universe actually is the reason we have Star Wars. It's the reason we have so many other things, because so many ideas were taken from it, right? You can take original ideas and, like, put your own twist to them and stuff like that, and that's stealing, like, an artist is what everyone does. But it's so fascinating that you're kind of like, oh, this suddenly makes a little bit of sense of why this moves that way, why the first movie was that way, and now, like, I'm excited for the second part of the book, which was the second movie, so it was great.
I've seen a lot of people argue on Twitter about that specifically, because like people always be like, oh, Star Wars fans so mad, but Star Wars came from Dune. But then like other people who are like, actually, they both came from this other one that was before. And I'm just like,
was the other one now? Like, probably now Foundation. I'm so, huh?
It's probably Foundation.
I was like, probably Foundation, Isaac Asimov. And I have been watching the series and reading, I like saw the books the other day at a Barnes & Noble. I was like, ooh.
Well, here's the thing. The other part of this that's so fun for me, and I haven't read the books, and I think I'll keep it that way for now. I might read them after, you know, final movie comes out. What's so fun about this that I never really got to experience with a lot of these other huge sci-fi or fantasy franchises is being able to experience that world building like from the ground up and from the beginning. Just seeing these galaxies, these, you know, relationships, these just like crazy otherworldly things that still have like human undertones and emotions and stuff like that, mm-hmm. be built from the ground up. And I know that those things exist with Star Wars and fantasy world, Harry Potter and stuff like that. But just with, I guess I was kind of unlucky just with how I came across those movies growing up. I wasn't allowed to watch them when I was like a bit younger, like a lot of people did. And so they would go and they'd watch them in order. So I would just go to a party and they'd say, oh, let's watch this Star Wars. Let's watch this Harry Potter. So my viewing experience just of all of these were just all mixed up. It was all over the place. And it's not that that's bad. And it's not that I don't like those movies. I still do. And kind of same with Lord of the Rings as well. Got a little mixed up and stuff. But I've just never had like a sci-fi franchise that I was just completely blind coming into and was able to watch it from the beginning and go from there. And you guys know me. We like last year, a couple years ago, when Dune was up for the Oscars, and I had like, I don't remember if I had watched it or if I had like, just like been like, oh yeah, I've heard about it. And it's like, okay, whatever. But I was like, it's fine. But then I finally watch it. I'm like, okay. And then I watch Dune 2 and I'm like, okay, I'm ready. So
I'm glad because I remember you being more even keel about it.
Lukewarm about it.
Yeah. That's interesting because that's the exact opposite experience that I kind of had going into Dune 2, this last one. Because I've read the book twice now. I saw the first movie, and then leading up to part two, I was like, I'm going to reread the entire book. So I jumped right into it, and I was very distracted while watching Dune Part 2 because I was so, the book was so fresh on my mind that I had all of that lore already built up, and I was watching the movie more almost comparing the two, which kind of... it didn't ruin it. I loved the movie. It was fantastic. And I loved the ways that they changed the book to the movie. Like, they did it for the better. I mean, for years and years, right? They used to say that Dune was an unfilmable movie, unfilmable book or whatever, you know, that like, you could not make an accurate version. And there is so, so, so much that they didn't even, like, touch on in this movie that is in the book. Like, I'm pretty sure Denis Villeneuve got, like, when they asked him about why the Mentats aren't in it, like the human computers, he basically said, oh, this is a Ben Gesserit movie. This is all about the witches. Like, I had to either choose one or the other and to focus on, and I chose the witches. So it's like, there's so much that they didn't do. The ending is different. The way that, like, Zendaya's character reacts to specific things is very different from the book. Straight up, there's a character that is basically missing. Are we gonna jump into some spoilers here?
We should go into spoiler territory. I think that's okay.
Yeah, if you guys, that's fine. Okay. I want to talk about everything, and I don't want
to
be.
So I guess just to wrap up my thought real quick is just like I'm a little bit jealous of you being able to go in just completely fresh.
Yeah.
But some of the people that I've talked to that have watched this movie have just been like, the first one was boring. There's nothing really happened. It's really slow. Blah blah blah. You know. And then the second one they absolutely loved because it's more human focused and relationship focused versus the first one they had to do so much world building. And so I don't know. I absolutely love the movie as well. It's easily up there as one of the best sci-fis. Denis Villeneuve is like probably the best director that we have out right now, in my opinion. For like sci-fi, no one can do visuals like freaking Denis Villeneuve can. Jumping into spoilers real quick, like one of the changes that they made, like I just want to finish that thought, is just they took a little girl character, Paul's little sister, who is 2 years old in the movie, and I'm sitting here watching the movie like, I wonder how they're gonna do this.
She's
how
2 years old
gonna...
in the book.
Oh yeah, excuse me,
she's not
book.
In the movie at
and
all.
In the movie she's like still in the belly, which Angela, when she watched it, she kept thinking, or maybe it was my sister, I can't remember, somebody that I watched it with kept thinking, like, is she actually talking to the baby or manipulating everybody around her? So it completely changes like their idea of Jessica and who she is, versus in the book it's like you have this 2-year-old child with the mental capacity of a complete adult with millennia of history memory in her brain, and that kind of changes characters specific ways, but it's not bad. And so I was watching the movie thinking like, you know, this is different, that's different, but good, but you know, so I'm kind of jealous of your experience where it was
so fun.
Go in from the ground up and just take it in and enjoy it. And so I think when Dune Part 3 comes out, Dune Messiah, I
don't think I
finished
ever read
the Dune 2. I finished Dune 2 and I was just like, I'm gonna jump into Messiah, I'm ready for some more Dune. And then after I watched it, I was like, maybe I'll wait for the movie. I'll take Michael's advice that he always gives me. Don't read the book because it ruins the movies.
And I've been over here like, I'm ready to read more books and have more movie correlations. And I've been doing that. I think like also very much like last night, so what's really interesting is I love music. I love something going on in the car on the drive home after the movie. And last night, like at the end of the movie, I just drove home in utter silence. I was like, holy cow, that was such a good film. And just like the whole impact of it. And you're right, like characters are missing. I love how they focus on the Bene Gesserit. And like I gave this was my first 5-star review in a long time on Letterboxd. And Josh is like, hit me up, like, we got to break that. But I kind of, this was my review of it after giving 5 stars. What will we talk about in this podcast? How amazing this film was? Because it was so good. And then for those of you who get it, I guess I was a Fremen in my early 20s too, following that desert rat to share the Bene Gesserit words. For those of you who get it, you get it. But it's kind of one of those things where it's more or less like I loved the whole entire, like, this story felt really cool because, like, you have Javier Bardem, and I know you're going to love talking about this too, who's just like, you think that he's being so sarcastic the whole entire time, but his devotion to the whole piece is so strong that that's like his character, his soul, his person, like, is there. And then also, like, I love Rebecca Ferguson as Jessica. Like, when you're talking about it, she does such a good job. And in one of the interviews, she talks about, like, they're talking about, like, how we're going to put a veil over you like the whole time. She's like, absolutely not. So she like changed the costume, in which it made it much more unique. Yeah. Like her, the version of the Bene Gesserit that she did was supposed to be more similar to like the actual Bene Gesserit wardrobe that you see on every other kind planet they visit. Yeah. The veil.
I love the tattoos that they did on her. Like, very so cool. Like the visuals in this, the just the mind of Denis and whoever else helped him create this world and the look of everything and the inspiration of just like that kind of Middle East like religion and society, you know, or culture, I guess is the word I'm looking for. It's just, it fits so perfectly with this. I mean, that's what the original Fremen were inspired by in the book, was like that part of the world anyway, but just the way that he has taken these.
I don't want to like take it out of context, but I think they're supposed to be, maybe I should not say this until I double check, but I think they're kind of like closely related to like obviously the Middle East, but the Berbers who travel quite a bit throughout like North Africa and into the Arabian Peninsula type thing, who are very nomadic peoples. So I am curious about that, and I'll double check, but I've heard rumor that that is kind of where the whole thing comes from. Like I'm actually super curious. So I'm going to look it up.
Okay. You mentioned music briefly because you're talking about how you listen to no music on the way home. The first time I watched this movie was, I want to say, a week or less than a week after we recorded, I think it was our Oscars episode. And I am quoted in the Oscars episode with saying, I don't know, guys. I've moved on from Hans Zimmer. Ludwig Göransson is the GOAT now. And I still stand by Ludwig Göransson 100%. He just won another Oscar for the Oppenheimer soundtrack, and I'm so happy he did. But Hans Zimmer, guys, and people are always joking, oh, Hans Zimmer's interns now, oh, doing everything, and else, blah, blah, blah. Oh, my gosh. Seeing this movie in IMAX, and that score blasting, reverberating through my body, oh, my gosh, guys, Hans Zimmer, oh, he's so good. He's back, so baby. Good. Like, okay, so we can talk more about the music as well, but I kind of want to use this to transition into kind of favorite scenes. And one of my favorite scenes, and I think one of everyone's favorite scenes, is Paul riding the worm for the first time. And this was where I really, like, this movie is excellent all around. And even in this movie, it takes a lot to build up, like, kind of to the main points of action. There's a lot of stuff that goes on, and a lot of very cool lore stuff that was keeping me intrigued. But when this worm riding scene hit, and he, you know, this whole thing, oh, not that big, like, and then the worm comes, and he has to run over and get on it, and he's still getting slapped all around. And I was reading all about the behind-the-scenes stuff and how long it took them to film this scene and all the crazy stuff that they had to do. And then he finally gets his footing, and he gets the hooks in, and he's pulling it up, and then he steps up, and it's like, like, oh my gosh, like, chills were all through my, there was so much of this movie that I was just awestruck, but I'm pretty sure after this scene happened and the scene changed, I like shook my head and I was like, oh yeah, I'm in the theater. Oh, freaking close my mouth. Like,
conserve your water. Stop drooling.
Exactly. That's what Stilgar would have said to me. Like, never give your water away, not even for Dune Part 2.
Like, do you know what I thought was really cool about this is knowing the book, right? And being like,
I gotta go let that dog.
Oh,
but you guys.
Oh, good. But knowing the book, for me, they talk about like the flaps and like how they have to lift up the scales and stuff like that, and how there are certain like the scales are firmer on one side of the beast versus the other one. It was like super fantastic. But like when they're talking about like when he's pulling it up and you can see the air vents and stuff in the thing, I love that.
Well, here's the thing.
It's like the little detail that mattered to me right there was understanding it.
I feel like we kind of talked about, there's too much from the book that can't make it into the movie. And a lot of times things have to get glossed over. I feel like that and a few other lines and the writing in the movie was really smart because I feel like they give you so much of that lore with the book with a super simple or fast scene, because I'm not saying I understood 100% the science and all the stuff behind how the worm works with them writing it and doing that, but them just doing that quick little, it anchors up and then he pulls it and you see those and then he stays up and then he's above the ground and not going down into it. You're like, oh, okay, I kind of get what's going on. I understand why that's happening. And they do it so fast.
Well, and they do it cleverly. And that's what I think is important. Like, and if we want to nerd out about film adaption to movie adaption, movie to film adaptions or whatever, we don't have to. But like, you need just enough to get it, right? Like what you're talking about. You don't need like the 7 pages that was originally there to describe this and talk about it and just the random things. You just need enough. And I love that. And also when he was riding the worm, I loved how they did the things where he's like throwing them out there, like how they're close. And then he can like send them out like fishing poles almost to like reach it. Also, the thumper was cool, like the experience of him going down and like testing the ground. And
you could hear the difference of the sand. And
oh, it was good. But also, I think when you talk about kind of the riding of the sandworm and kind of this thing was the variation of how many sandworms there were for me. Like when we went to like that temple where they get the water of life from the smaller sandworms, talking about the big ones and kind of like showing the Fremen walk just to not disturb it. I loved how they kind of build the whole lore and don't make it such a huge thing. And then last night when we watched it, one of my favorite things is when he's going off overnight into the desert and,
Chani
follows him and she's like, your walk is wrong. And he's like, well, in the books I've read, I was like, that's how I feel at points when like you missed something in this movie because of the book. Cause I'm like, oh yeah. And like he kind of like realized like, oh yeah, I'm learning from an actual Fremen right now. So I thought there was some fun quips with that, especially around the desert. And I just want to eat that spice. So bad.
Dude, like, careful what you wish for. Don't get addicted to the spice.
Yeah, I want them blue eyes, but
the blue eyes, but then if it goes away, you die.
Gotta have it. Gotta need it. Got it. But like, what I thought was cool was how, like, how they just use sand so effectively in this. Because, like, sand is beautiful in itself, right? And I'm not, like, becoming, like, a sand stan or anything like that. I'm just, like, I think it's really cool how they did the sand and how I'm just, like, you look at it and it's like the crystals and the dust and like everything. You're like,
yeah, it looks so pretty.
It's cool.
Especially when the sun is low. Arrakis is so beautiful when the sun is low.
Yes, yes.
Vince, favorite scenes? I mean, you talked about worm riding
scenes. Oh, man, there's a lot. Yeah, the worm riding scene's really, really cool. I think the one that immediately stands out in my mind, though, like, is the scene on, I can't remember the name of the planet, but the black and white planet.
Something Prime,
Goshi Prime, something like that.
I just the change visually from going from just this beautiful like orange and red and sandy landscape to just this like stark black and white of this other planet was just like
sun.
It's just so crazy. And I was wondering why it was doing that in the trailers when they showed scenes. I was like, is this gonna be like a flashback scene or something? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But I loved this idea. Like, I don't remember if I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I've talked about this a lot to people. But I love Star Wars. You guys know that. One of the things about Star Wars is no matter what planet they go to, it still just kind of feels like Earth, you know, because they always can breathe the same air and everything's kind of, I mean, there's like different aliens and stuff, but it's like not like, it always kind of feels like a different version of Earth. Anyway.
So somewhere else on Earth?
Yeah. This idea of a planet that has a black sun that changes visually everything when you go outside. So when you're inside, you see color because the sun's not affecting you. But as soon as you walk outdoors, all color vanishes and everything is just like the stark contrast. And even the fireworks are not like light.
Oh, you talking about
the inkblot like fireworks.
Yeah, it's just like so interesting and visually cool. And it makes you feel like legitimately I'm on another planet. Then he did it again in the first movie when he goes and you see the scene of the planet where the the warriors are bred.
Oh, yes.
If you guys remember the that at all.
Sardaukin.
Yeah.
That's what they're called, right?
The Sardaukar.
Sardaukar. Planet Sardaukar. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Just right. He does such a good job at creating these worlds and like presenting something that feels and looks just completely different than what you're used to in other planets.
The Sardaukar tattoos sequence. Now that you're bringing that up was cool. Like, I love the Sardaukar. Actually, you know what's really cool about like the homeworld of the Harkonnens when you're talking about this, right? Yeah. Is that it shows their ruthlessness. Like, it shows why they're so ruthless. Like, inside is different than outside. Outside is harsh. It's blinding. It's aggressive. And then the whole entire stadium right there was so cool. I love the geometry of the stadium, but the celebration and like, I loved how like, you know, like you see the one Harkonnen guy who's Dave Bautista's character, and he's just out there, you know, freaking out and doing all these things. And he's a little bit more different in his rage and his unhingedness. And then you go see Austin Butler's guy, who I'm just also forgetting his name.
Fade
Ralpha. Thank you. And that guy, like the way he does it is so scary and just so, it's so impressive how they did that. And just like the scene where he like licks the knife and it's not sharp enough or something like that. And you're like, oh, I just saw you did. It definitely is sharp enough. And like how he has like cannibal concubines. I don't even know.
Dude, yeah, that's not from the book, right? That's what I've heard. That's
like, no, Fade in the book. I don't know how much you want to get into it, but he's not as, they make him much more of a threat in the movie than he is in the book. He's a little weaker in the book. He actually loses the fight in the stadium in the book and actually has to use a cheat word in order to.
There's like a cheat.
He has a safe word. Yeah. <That's> Anyway, I won't get into that. But they did a good job making him definitely like a kind of rival to Paul in this one.
Well, and
like the mirror of Paul, of what Paul could have been if he was raised Harkonnen and not. I've spaced everybody's names in this.
Atreides.
If you would have talked to me, if we would have done this a week ago, man, I was on the ball back then. Just ask Angela.
And all this stuff. Like,
what are you talking about?
Well, cool, like behind the scenes stuff, which I heard they had to do really interesting work for costumes and everything like that to give the world such a crazy appearance and stuff when they were there. They filmed it, you know, looking in black and white. Yeah. They filmed it in infrared.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Interesting.
So they used like, that is actually what was shot as, right? It's not like they had to color change it. They shot it in that color, right? Like,
so
in
they could see the.
Well, yeah, because you can see the contrasting light and stuff like that, and it made a problem for, like, some costume stuff because some things would just disappear and stuff like that out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But it also, like, gave some opportunities for things to just disappear and appear out of nowhere. Like Casey mentioned, our favorite people that we actually want to know something about, what is up with the guards in the arena with the cool big old hats?
Yes, I want to know
what's
about
going on with those guys.
So, but what it made me think was it reminded me of, like, Chronicles of Riddick Pitch Black when he's out there with all those dark monsters. Yeah, yeah. And like what's crazy about that is like when you think of the arena and right, I assume that they base this off of the Colosseum type idea, right? Like those guys are out there and they have these little like poles where it slaps a knife into that guy's skin, but they're out there looking like sketchy court jesters in the Babadook. Like, I don't even know what this is. Like, Babadook. I don't even know, but like,
you're not wrong.
I'm just like, I don't get it. But
love how he does that though. He did it in the first one too. There's a scene with the Harkonnens where this little like spider creepy thing crawls out and they don't say anything about it. They just kind of, it's there and it like creeps you out and then it like crawls away and that's the end of it.
And she does the voice. It's like, get out. And it's like,
yeah. Oh, the voice is like, so cool.
The Bene Gesserit stuff.
Yeah, those guys are sweet though. I got one more scene that I really liked. I loved the way they opened the movie too. In the desert with the Sardaukar like coming in and hunting them down, and it's
like
just
10
like,
minutes after the end of the last one.
Yeah, yeah, after like right after. Yeah. And it's just like the way that they like float. There's this idea they do it in the first one too, where it's just like silence as they like float through the air and stuff, and it's like it just feels, watching it just, it feels unnatural kind of watching them do it.
The way they did it was so cool.
And they just start falling.
Those are Harkonnens. Those aren't Sardaukar.
Those are Harkonnens.
I think they're Sardaukar disguised as Harkonnens.
Because in the book they are.
At least that's what it was in the book.
Right.
That makes sense.
It's been a while since I've seen the movie.
Because I just like.
Because
look at the outfit directly, and I'm like, that's what it is.
We're getting into the politics of things.
The Sarkar technically weren't there. It was just the Harkonnens in the book. I remember
basically
this.
The Emperor wanted to get rid of the Atreides, but he couldn't do it without upsetting all the other houses, and so he basically manipulated the Harkonnens to kill the Atreides family for him and gave him all of these Sardaukar, sold him the Sardaukar so they could come in and help
wipe
him out. So he couldn't have any proof that he was there. So all the Sardaukar were like.
And the Sardaukar are also like from the prison planet. And they did a good job of putting all the scars on the side of their heads because they're straight up implanted with something in order to control them. I guarantee it. Like, did you notice that feature?
I didn't notice that.
Oh, man. I noticed it on the Sardaukar we saw. There was like some good scarage up there. I'm like, that's what that is. Like, it looks like. It doesn't look like a slash like kind of they did with. Josh Brolin's character, it was like straight up like a medical type slash, like right here. And I'm like, that's what that is. It's a mind control or it's a detonator inside their head. So if they don't,
it's not mind control. Because I remember it might be detonator, I don't know. But I remember them going into the details of like what makes a soldier like attached to their leader or whatever, you know, like what makes a good soldier die for the cause or for the people. And it's basically raising them in a Fremen environment where they're basically on the brink of death always. And I don't know, it gets into it, and it's essentially mind control, just not with a chip. It's just like raising someone from the ground up and like making them feel like you are their savior is the way to make a perfect soldier that's like dedicated to you. It's cool. Yeah. It's cool. It's all.
I agree with you.
You could go so deep into all this stuff. There's like 6 to 9 books, I think, now, too.
And like, the kids have, some of the sons have written further books and stuff like that. It's like crazy, like building on the universe off of Frank Herbert's notes.
And that's, I don't, the only thing, okay. There's nothing I hate about this movie. Loved every bit of it. The only thing that I want is like, there's enough content, there's enough world here to make so much if you wanted to really explore it and get into it.
But I feel like that goes, I agree with you, but I feel like that goes to where we lose the quality if we keep building this way. Because there's no film series, save Harry Potter, that continuously improved the story and how they pushed it. I'm saying that sarcastically.
There's no way we could get this movies quality. Of this quality and visual and these visuals.
Yes.
And make enough of them to tell the entire detailed world and story.
Yeah.
Like if we did a TV show, the budget's going to have to be cut way back. It's not going to be nearly as visually pleasing as this. So there's no way that I'm not saying like, oh, I wish I had a TV show instead of a movie. Like you got to choose one or the other, you know? Well, and I'm happy with what we got with this. This feels like movies are back. You know what I mean? Like it's been a while since we've like got a really well-made shot in location. Visuals look incredible. CGI looks awesome. Storyline is great. Like, I would not trade this movie for a series at all. Like,
10 out of 10, I agree with you. I just want to say what I loved is that so much of this is filmed on location. And I think that's what made it special is because
on a green screen or on the void or whatever they call it.
Yeah, like Rebecca Ferguson talks about this. She goes, sorry, I'm obsessed with her right now because of Silo and stuff like that and like stuff I've been watching. But she's like, why do I want to go work on a green screen when I can go be in the desert and rough it and actually experience what the character experienced? Which leads me to my favorite scene in the long run of what makes this.
Okay. That was my next question.
Yeah, perfect.
Movie beautiful in my mind was the Fremen homes, like the underground caverns, like the beauty of those things, right? I've had a lifelong obsession with going and seeing Petra, which is carved into the wall, right, in Jordan. But like, seeing this and how like deep it is and kind of the inspiration behind it and in the depths of the culture within this and like that scene where they're pouring Giannis's like water into the big pool and stuff like that, it's just so visually beautiful to me and like how that's all built out, because like you always wonder, like it's one of those things where I actually like one of my friends from work, he talked about this yesterday in kind of like a little conversation. He's like, I'd like to go back in time and see who discovered what or made the decision to do something, right? And I loved the thought of this as like, who the heck decided to build out these different caverns and how did it become more intricate as they kept going? Because like, I imagine like the early parts, they were trying just to get in and get out and get safe, like to find a way to conserve water. And then as the deeper they go, it seems like the more intricacies there become, like the less rudimentary. And then the different spaces between the north and the south and that middle temple, wherever they stop, where he gets the water of life, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like fascinating how this culture has developed that. And then my other favorite scene really quickly, and I don't want to dive into this too long, is actually the fight scene at the end between like that giant like dome spaceship. And I loved it how like the spaceship lands and it has all the that comes out, but then they're riding the worms around this valley that's supposed to be protected. That reminds me of Mordor, to be honest with you. It's like Mordor, like it's protected valley, like the winds, we got it. And the shield was amazing. So Josh, I'm not gonna go too crazy, but that was one of my favorite things. I love the introduction to Princess Irulan as well, and I'm excited that the next movie will feature Florence Pugh more heavily, as kind of the storyline will be more on her next time. But
so I thought you were actually talking about a different one, because my final favorite scene is the final fight scene between
Fade Ralpha
and
Paul Atreides.
May thy knife shatter.
May thy knife chip and shatter.
Yeah, thank you. And he's like, likewise, or whatever.
May thy knife chip and shatter. Dude, Austin Butler. Okay, Austin Butler and Florence Pugh. I'm going to talk about the fight scene, but Austin Butler and Florence Pugh were given like, I think people have looked at it, and it is a surprisingly small amount of screen time.
Yeah.
And they still did a lot, and they ate with what they had. Like, goodness gracious. And this final fight scene.
Do you know the vibe that they had really quickly? I'm going to quote the Christmas story of the leg lamp. They were given the vibe of that electric sex in their little teeny time that they had in there. It was just like, you guys did it. You nailed it. I've never like been like, wow, Fade Ralpha. And I was like, cool, because Sting was the original Fade Ralpha. Yeah. But like in this one, like I loved how creepy he was. Also, one quick comment on Fade Ralpha's outfit. If you remember Dragon Ball Z or the Spy Kids 3D, that was his costume.
There you go.
Think about that really quickly. Sorry. Go on.
That final fight scene between Paul and Fade was just absolutely incredible with the cinematography, with where it would cut to them with the sun, right? The gorgeous, faded, beautiful sun in the background and them in this lobby room and just having their shadows, but just the perfect, you know, fighting shadows ready to duel and everything. And then the sound just dropping out and just having it be just the sound from the fight, literally nothing else. You could hear gasps from the crowd and stuff here and there, but it just not being this big, crazy music, just raw, physical, one-on-one fighting action. And then it ending in, oh my goodness, that's my last favorite scene, and I'll leave it there because I still have a lot that I want to talk about.
I agree with you though. Well, where do you want, anyone else want to touch on favorite scenes here really quickly? Nope, I don't want to go too crazy. What do you want to talk about next? What's your next thing?
So my next thing is one of the things that Casey and I talked a little bit about, and there's so many themes in this, or I guess performances. Let's do performances really quick because we've kind of already touched on Austin Butler and Florence Pugh. We have mentioned Rebecca Ferguson. Senor Skarsgård, bro.
Dude.
Senor Skarsgård. Here's the thing. It's Stellan Skarsgård, right?
Yeah, Stellan.
I always mix up their names.
I love that you call him Senor Skarsgård.
I call him Senor Skarsgård because I was afraid of like saying like Alexander Skarsgård or something and just picking the wrong Skarsgård.
Call him Father Skarsgård.
Grandfather.
Hello, grandfather.
like all of them did so good in all of this, and Zendaya also, especially in the final third, had basically no lines, but probably portrayed the most emotion and the most change for a character in this movie with the change that Paul goes through when he discovers like his want or his desire to drink it and be the Lisan Al Gaib and everything that goes along with it, and her just being so resentful of that, but not saying anything, but portraying it all through her face. She does an excellent job. I think Timothy Chalamet also does an excellent job. He's been just, these are the new age movie stars, guys. That's what people have been talking about. Like, dude, Dune 2 is like the movie. And why is it the movie? Like, the new movie stars are here. You talk about Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie. I mean, Margot Robbie's still in Barbie and stuff like that. But just like, you're like, those are movie stars. Florence Pugh, Austin Butler, Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya,
Christopher Walken.
Movie stars.
Christopher Walken's pretty young in his career. I'm excited for him to get like an opportunity to like really stretch his legs as a movie star.
He's the Emperor, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. That was one of the castings. Yeah. I like him. I was like, what is this casting?
I actually love the way they did this casting versus like, so I'm going to talk about the original movie, the comparison, because the original movie, the Emperor's like in military regalia and kind of like garby. And I like how he's like living this peaceful life as an old man, kind of prepping his daughter to take power, right? To take over. And I kind of like that. I kind of like the idea that this is a man in kind of the last season of his life, sharing wisdom, imparting wisdom, trying to make sure that like he is passing on, like as the Padishah Emperor, however you want to say it, he's just like prepping this out. And I actually thought it was very appropriate, but like the weird thing about power, especially I think in the Dune universe, is Leto Atreides talks about it in the first movie of why they won on Caladan was by air and by sea, right? And that's how they had that power. He has the Sardaukar and all the houses behind him in a certain way, and that's how he has power. So he didn't need to be this big menacing thing. He just had to have the right boards, the right pieces on the board, and that's what he's done, it seems like. But who knows? Maybe as a younger man, he was much more terrifying. I don't know. But like the one we saw was great.
You want to know my favorite difference between the 80s movie and the new movie?
Yeah.
The fact that he takes the Harkonnens, and in the 80s ones, they have like giant eyebrows and just ridiculous hair everywhere. And in this one, he's just like, shave them off. We're not doing that again. That looks terrible.
Do you know who
get rid of the hair.
Harkonnens reminded me of with that? They look like the architects or engineers from Prometheus.
Yeah, 100%.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, wait, is this like a Prometheus crossover? Like, I was like, oh, this is what's going to happen in the Prometheus series. I love that actually as well. And also, here's the thing is like, Baron Harkonnen, and they talk about it like when they're sucking the water from the Harkonnens at the early in the movie, like, oh, these are like chemical filled bodies, right? They're not great. But like Baron Harkonnen in this movie versus old movie, like he's ridiculous in the old movie. And in this one, he's like
actually threatening,
menacing and threatening. And like the one part, because I think it took like 4 or 5 hours for him to get in that fat suit every day, as far as I understand. It was a long freaking time. But like his way he portrayed the suit so well in my mind, like I didn't believe his fat suit, but like you get the bloated and how he has like the mechanical lung going with him and how he's just like a monster and
just become smoking this hookah. Just like lazy emperor just like sits around and smokes and and manipulates politics and what's
the oil bath.
Yeah, he wants
I want to sit in the bath. I don't even know what it really does, but I'm like, this oil bath is kind of tempting. Like, is it a hot tub? Is it a cold tub? Like, is it a hot tub, a cold plunge? Like, what health benefit am I getting here? Is he just like, he's down there like, breathing? He also reminds me of Jabba the Hutt meets a toad, like opposite kind of weird way, but just a terrifying toad.
Back to acting. Sorry, did you have something?
I was going to say that if you have good acting, we can do that because I have one final...
Like bad
acting thing, and it's a bad acting thing, and it's something that makes me sad, and it's like really my, I think I have a couple, but my real one nitpick of the movie, Dave Bautista, bro, he's freaking angry Drax again, and in all these interviews prepping up to Dune 2, he's talking about how Denis Villeneuve believed in him and how he's doing such great work and how he inspired him to do all this stuff, and then he's angry Drax. What the F? Oh my gosh, that's it.
I get it. He's a little, he takes that anger to like an 11 sometimes too, where I was just like, that's a little,
kill
that's,
them.
Take down a little bit, man. I agree. And Bautista's got it in him to be an artistic, like interesting actor. Like what he did in Blade Runner was fantastic. Yeah. When he's withheld and kind of quiet and it's just like this giant man in this like quiet, or this quiet man in this giant body, you know, like, I still have faith that he could be a fantastic actor when given the right roles. No, I haven't seen it yet.
He's also fantastic in that as well.
It's one of his defining roles, I've heard. So here's my thought on kind of the unraveling of Dave Bautista's character in this film is like, he's had the planet once before. It was taken from him, and now he's required to regain full control in such a short time. I agree. Angry Drax-esque. However, it makes sense for the character in knowing it.
Yeah, he's given an impossible task. Yeah, the Harkonnen.
It's almost like typecast.
What's his name? The Baron like gave it to him with the intention of forcing him to fail, so he could put Fade Rautha in charge afterwards.
Vladimir Harkonnen.
Because he wanted Bautista's character. Sorry, I'm going into the lore again.
Okay. Yeah.
He wanted Bautista's character to force the Fremen to view Fade as more of a savior character coming in and taking over, like taking Bautista out of power and being like, I will treat you better than this last guy did. Because Yeah, I'm not going to go into
this. He's terrible. I think what's really interesting, too, and I guess I want to call out, if you guys are good, just one more quick thing before we dive into the next topic really fast, unless you have more. No, but what I really enjoyed, actually, is the kind of, like, side characters were never too outlandishly ridiculous, in my opinion. So, like, when Paul comes in the first time into, like, the Fremen underland, whatever you want to call it, underworld.
The Fifes? Is that what they call it?
The Fife Sibley, so. Yeah, something like that. He... Like, they're all, like, angry at him for what he's done. He killed their friend. He did this. And, like, sometimes you see extras who are just, like, going way too hard. But because of how tight-knit and close this group is, they did such a good job of, like, actually showing the anguish, the anger. Like, one outsider is two. You killed our friend. Like, somebody who is one of us and is a part of us. And I was like, that's great. Like, they did a really good job. So, shout out to the extras on Dune. I didn't see all of you, obviously. And maybe some of you were that I was describing a little too crazy. But for those of you I saw... If I had two thumbs, you get both of them.
I don't mean to jump backwards, but just a favorite shot instead of a favorite scene when, I mean, okay, I'm going to jump backwards. We're going to do a favorite scene as well. Paul Muad'Dib Atreides walking into the temple
The
south. Yeah. And that whole scene is cool, but that shot from above when he's wading through the crowd and there's like the... It separates around him and there's just all of those little heads and stuff. You were talking about the extras and it made me think of that and the fact that I missed that. That scene afterwards as well when he gets in...
Raises the knife when they're
attacking. And he raises the knife and he does that whole monologue and that whole speech. It is just crazy. And to see Chani's reaction to it as well and then to just see him... take on this role that he had been trying to sort of
avoid,
distance himself from literally for so long until he knew or had heard from the voices that he needed to go south to see in full what happened. And that was what eventually convinced him to. He does this scene where this is where I'm like, oh my gosh, Timothy Chalamet. Like, yes, you did so good and so incredible. That whole scene where he goes up to each of these leaders. Well, because it's so crazy, because even at first, even people believing that he's the Lisan al Gaib, when he goes in and just starts breaking their traditions straight from the top, everyone's ready to fight him. Mm-hmm. Everyone is saying, you cannot do this. This is what's happening. But then he goes and he tells them what they're thinking and he shows them. He was like, you're afraid that I'm the one who you've been dreaming of, who you've been praying for, but it's me and I'm here. But it's like this menacing but crazy speech. It's insane. And it's insane for other reasons, which I also want to get into later. But I love that.
Well, I think, I don't know, sorry, do you have an addition onto that? Well, I think what's cool is I want to transition now into kind of what I think could possibly be the final section of this, would be like talking about like the craziness of the, like, it's not craziness, but like the amount of religious context and overtones into this that like fits so many spaces, but like without it, this movie wouldn't make sense, right? And that's kind of like where my comment earlier, like I too was, you know, following a desert rat and doing all this stuff for the Bene Gesserit, but how like powerful the conversation around all the religious stuff in it is, because you have like Chani and her crew over here who are like, no. And then you have, like, Javier Bardem, I forget his name also.
Stelgar.
And, like, his group over here, which are the fundamentalists, which are so deep into it. And then you have this, like...
He's too humble to admit that he is the Lisan al Gaib, as written.
See, and that's what's, like, fascinating, is to, like, really look at it. Because there's so much of this that you, like it's relevant to real life, but also they portray it so well and make it what it is. I don't know. Like,
yeah, Casey and I started talking about this a lot last night, and the religious commentary on this and the amount of parallels it draws into our world in multiple ways, not for one religion specifically, but for a lot of religions, and not in just like a straight up like religion, like religious, like hate type speech or anything like that, but just the commentary that it has on it and the implications of religion and what religions, and in these cases, extreme religions, can be used to control people are insane. The biggest thing is, and this is where my sort of like knowledge about the lore kind of lacks, but the movie gives you enough, even if you don't know those things, to clue you in to know that these actions and everything that's going on, when they're talking about raising prospects, it's not just some like, oh yeah, this is something that we've been talking about. There's a line in the movie, and I kind of put it in my thing because I feel like it kind of goes overlooked because of just Timothée Chalamet yelling. But he's talking to his mother right before they leave for the South, right before she leaves for the South. And he said, what your people did to this planet is heartbreaking. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, so not only is Arrakis just like this desert planet just because it is, but it's been different in the past. Is that
like
what I
centuries
from
of
the lore? Like,
centuries of Bene Gesserit kind of influx, because they're all over the galaxy. And if you remember, after that one Bene Gesserit goes and hooks up with Fader Alpha, the literal repeat back was like posterity secured, essentially, so that we can continue this. They've been doing this strategically as a religion and organization to control, like, they're really the ones who are in control in the long run, I think, on that and how it works. But yes, you're correct. Like, they probably had some different local piece that they've now pushed into the forward of this.
Yeah, Casey's right. Like, the Bene Gesserit basically are running everything. Like, the Emperor thinks he's in charge, but the Bene Gesserit are pretty much, like, manipulating everyone and everything, including genetics and trying to create the Lisan al-Ghaib, all this kind of stuff. And they basically go from planet to planet and implant this religion everywhere they go as a means of escape if someone goes there, so that they can, if they get stranded on the planet, or like Dune, they can basically go in and be like, no, I'm a prophet, listen to all these things. I've never been here before, but I already know all your secrets about your religion. I am the prophet, listen to me. And then they have like an escape route to get back into power. That's essentially what the Lisan al-Ghaib is, this fake religious prophet, zealot, chosen one, whatever you want to call it. And that's why Paul is so like against taking the title, because he knows it's false, it's manipulative, it's taking advantage of this people that he's fallen in love with.
Well, and the next part of that line that I was talking about was, she tells him, she was like, oh yeah, like, you say what we did is heartbreaking, but we gave these people something to hope for. And then, you know, he's like, that's not hope, and he yells, and that's like, I feel like why it maybe kind of gets overlooked. And I don't think that's bad acting, it's just kind of like, I feel like people overlook the words that were just said because of that. And it's like, it's a whole, not new definition, but it's a whole different meaning than the usual meaning of false hope, because there's false hope hoping for something that you like won't get, and then there's false hope hoping for something that has been crafted and manipulated for you specifically. And it is absolutely crazy, because Zendaya's, right, Chani, she has the line about the Messiah, right? Like, oh, like, how do you control people? Like, you tell them the Messiah is coming, and then they'll wait for centuries and they'll do all of this. The craziest part is that they've done this, they've planted all these prophecies, and then they've provided this prophecy, the Lisan al-Ghaib, basically as written. And when you do that, you can literally control people. And the biggest example of this that Casey and I were also talking about last night is, once you get to that point and you provide them the Messiah they're looking for, people will abandon their beliefs, right? Paul went in and he started talking in the place where you're not allowed to talk, but because he was the Lisan al-Ghaib, it was okay. They attacked the people and they did all this stuff because now it was okay, because he's the Lisan al-Ghaib and he's the one they've been waiting for. So now they follow him no matter what. At the very beginning of the movie, you have Jamis's water. You have, even when the Harkonnens have the dirty blood, but it's good for the cooling systems, they take care to harvest and use the water from every single soul, every single person that they can, because that's what they've done. That's their religion. That's what's sacred to them. At the end of the movie, they attack the city, and the Fremen are burning piles of bodies because the Lisan al-Ghaib has showed up, and now following him takes precedence over their beliefs that they've had for centuries.
Well, and one thing that I think is really interesting is they're getting on ships to leave. Like, in the book, correct me if I'm wrong, like, his whole idea is to not start the global jihad, and that's what they're going to do. Like, that's really what's happening. And maybe, I don't know anything further beyond this.
I haven't read it, me neither.
But, like, I'm, like, curious. I'm like, but he's trying to avoid this whole thing happening the whole entire time. And then at the end, he's like, fine, if the other houses won't accept me, I'm going for it. I'm like, and he takes the Fremen from their planet out, which the only goal of the Fremen, if I understand right, in the book, is to make it a safe place for them to restore the water, to build it into the space. And I think that's really interesting. Like, you talk about it, like, what changes people as they see the signs, as they do things. And it's very interesting. Like, if they're waiting for it, you know, it's kind of like, if you play it, they'll come. But if you play it too hard, they forget what they really have been waiting for and what they've really been doing. Because, like, why couldn't he have just kept you know, Dune safe? Like, why couldn't Arrakis have been just a great place? Why not? Just, like, stay here. Do your thing. Do you have to do it? Why couldn't you have talked to the Padishah Emperor and said, cool, this is our planet. Get out. We'll harvest spice. We'll manage. We'll own it. But, like, see ya.
Do you want me to keep on being that guy of Will in the book?
Yeah, do it. Do it.
One of the biggest difference of the book versus the movie is the book ends very neatly in a tight little bow where Paul does ascend to emperorship or whatever. Yeah. Like it ends with the big meeting or the standoff between him and the emperor. Fedratha gets killed. He goes to the emperor and he tells him, I'm going to marry your daughter. I have control of the spice. Mm-hmm. So I have control of everything. I will destroy it all unless you guys listen to me. And everybody in the room is just like, okay. And everybody's there. Like, everybody shows up because they want to watch the fall of this prophet. So all the different houses are there. The emperor's there. And he stands there and he says, I'm going to nuke all of the spice. And I'm going to get rid of all of it unless you guys kneel to me. I'm going to marry your wife. I'm going to withhold everything that we've set up. We're going to continue this whole thing so there's not a holy war.
Yep.
And Shani's like, yeah, do it. Like, she's like, I get it. And he's like, I'm going to marry the emperor's daughter. I'm going to marry her, but I will never have sex with her. She's my wife only in name, and that's it. Shani's my one true love. And Shani's like, yeah, we're good. And the emperor's like, okay. And the rest of the house is like, all right, let's do it. And then that kind of wraps it up. And then his
mom, right? Like, doesn't she say, like, you know, who will be remembered is not the queen, but the concubines who influence the most, mm-hmm. right? That's because like
that's Jessica's whole thing is she never ended up marrying Paul's dad. Yep. And that's like her one regret is like she always loved him. And so she's like, yeah, it's the people. Yeah.
Sorry, I interjected. No, that's probably said it worse. That's a great
point. No, it's way better than I did.
Okay. Well, anything else you guys want to add before we close out the podcast?
This movie is so good, guys. It's going to take a crazy movie to remove this one from my number one of the year. I'm going to say that pretty early. And who knows, maybe recency bias will push it and do something like that. But for right now, it's at number one and it'll take a lot to knock it off.
I'll send you this podcast when you don't put it as number one at the end of the year. So well, anything else from you, Vince?
No, I love the Dune universe. I absolutely love everything about it. So this movie's incredible. Denis Villeneuve is a master artist. I can't wait for Messiah to come out. But at the same time, take your time with it. I'm patient.
Like you? I enjoyed this movie. There's nothing I found as a fault of this film. Josh is weeping tears of joy over the goodness of this movie. If you haven't watched Dune and somehow watched a whole spoiler-full podcast about Dune, I hope you'll watch it now. You should definitely check out the original Denis Villeneuve filming of Dune. If you want, go look at the old David Lynch film to see how far we've come. And finally, please check us out on our socials. Give us a follow on YouTube. For those of you who subscribe, follow us. Thank you so much. And any feedback or comments that you guys have for us, please let us know. We do want to understand more of the Dune universe. While I may have listened to the book and Vince has read it twice, there are plot holes in this that we don't fully know. So if you know more about the lore between the, you know, the Harkonnens and the Atreides and the other houses and whatnot, please let us know. And what should we expect from Dune Messiah? Anyhow, thank you so much for tuning in to the Pause, Rewind, Play podcast. Guys, thanks for doing this still. Appreciate it every time. You guys are the bee's knees, and we'll catch you next time.